Without the tachyon theory, I would lack any kind of scientific formulation and would have to declare that God has shown me the sacred tablets in which the future is written, and so forth, as did our forefathers. Back on the deserts of Israel under the sky as they tended their sleeping flocks. Kessler also points out that according to modern theory, the universe is moving from chaos to form. Therefore, tachyon bombardment would contain information which expressed a greater degree of gestalt than similar information about the present. It would thus at this time continuum seem more living, more animated by a conscious spirit, to us giving rise to the concept of God. This would definitely give rise to the idea of purpose, in particular, purpose lying in the future. Thus, we now have a scientific method of considering the notion of teleology. I think, which is why I am writing you now to express this, my own sense of final causes, as we discussed that day. Much of this printed out information arriving in dreams has had a teaching, shaping, and directing quality. It tends to inform and guide me, and make me aware of what I should do. It literally educates me, and I'm sure each small creature, each bug and plant and animal and fish, has the same sense of it. I've watched my cat now as he sits out on the sun deck at night. He is beyond doubt considering the sidereal world above him and not moving objects below. When he comes into the house an hour or two later, he seems modified, as if he has been taught during that period and knows it. I think this happens to us all, but I managed consciously to transduce above the threshold of awareness, which is unusual but not unique, and became aware of this constant natural and normal process, which shapes all life from the future, as Kessler describes. It is often described as the divine plan, or better yet, continual creation. Any such terms will do, but I regard it for my own purposes as a continual informational printout from the future, which directs us all, not in the coercive sense that the past does, but experienced, and rightly so, as volition, as, so to speak, free will. This term sounds right to me each morning when I wake up and reflect on the pages of print I've seen during the night. I am not forced to do what the information brings to my attention. I am free to consider it, digest it, and understand it, and, with its assistance, act on it. Note. Here Dick acknowledges that, as he comes to terms with 2374, he can choose different maps for his exploration, since any such terms will do. He regards the present as a continual informational printout, in which he nonetheless and simultaneously has free will, a perception that is in accord with the thinking of physicist Erwin Schrödinger, one of the chief architects of the informatic paradigm Dick is experiencing. Schrödinger, whose idea of the code script in DNA gave birth to the concept of the genetic code, grapples in What is Life with the simultaneously mechanistic and free characteristic of human experience. 1. My body functions as a pure mechanism according to the laws of nature. 2. Yet I know, by incontrovertible direct experience, that I am directing its motions, of which I foresee the effects that may be fateful and all-important, in which case I feel and take full responsibility for them. The only possible inference from these two facts is, I think, that I, in the widest meaning of the word, that is to say every conscious mind that has ever said or felt I, am the person, if any, who controls the motion of the atoms according to the laws of nature. Notice that to perceive this twofold nature of the human being requires an act of contemplation on Dick's part. I am free to consider it, digest and understand it, and, with its assistance, act on it. R.D. End note. For well over 2 months, I was convinced that the Holy Spirit, which is to say God, was directing me, and in a sense this is true. It is a matter of semantics. At one time, these would have been the only terms we had available to us. We would have talked about a divine vision and so forth. What I think now is that more modern terms can be better applied. The future is more coherent than the present, more animate and purposeful, and in a real sense, wiser. It knows more, and some of this knowledge gets transmitted back to us by what seems to be a purely natural phenomenon. We are being talked to by a very informed entity, that of all creation as it lies ahead of us in time. Cordially, Philip K. Dick. P.S. In terms of Ubik, not the novel, but the force described in my novel, perhaps I was already becoming aware of this total coherence which the universe is moving toward, and which bombards us backward, so to speak, with information about itself, thus giving us a certain awareness of itself. I would think that for purely fictional purposes, the description given and the name given in the novel would be more rather than less accurate vis-a-vis the tachyon theory, which is connected with the theory that the universe is moving from chaos to form. Ubik talks to us from the future, from the end state to which everything is moving. Thus, Ubik is not here, which is to say now, but will be. And what we get is information about and from Ubik as we receive TV or radio signals from transmitters located in other spaces in this time continuum. I see no objection to interpreting the meaning of the force Ubik this way, nor in interpreting the purpose of the novel Ubik by saying that in it I was trying in a dim and unconscious way to express a series of experiences I had had most of my life of a directing, shaping, and assisting and informing force, much wiser than us, which we in no way could perceive directly. Where it was or what it was called, I did not know. I knew it only by its effects. In Kant's terms, it is, or as I understand now will be, a thing in itself. Thus I would express the purpose of the novel, my purpose anyhow, to be a fictional statement containing a presentation of this directing presence, which I arbitrarily chose the name Ubik for. That Ubik, or more accurately, the future total gestalt of purpose and meaning, may well have written the book through me is possible, but only in the sense that all creatures from grasshoppers on up, in particular small creatures such as grasshoppers, are written through by what we call instinct rather than writing their lives. However, I do think one could say this, rather than having it read Ubik by Philip K. Dick, one could put it this way. Philip K. Dick by Ubik. In a sense, I am joking, of course, but in a sense, I am not. I don't feel I was picked by a future force as its instrument, etc., bidden to make manifest its word, etc., any more than when you are watching a TV program, the transmitter has picked you. It is broadcast. It just radiates out in all directions, and some people tune in, some do not. Some like what they see and hear, some reject it. All I did was to transduce, as all creatures do. I just gave what I received a local habitation and a name, as Shakespeare put it. PPS. One aspect of regarding this as an information transmission and reception transduction system, like a teletype, might at last throw some light on the otherwise puzzling phenomena of glossolalia when seized by the Holy Spirit. In my reception of tachyon bombardment, assuming this is what it is, of course, I frequently either fail to transduce properly, error at the receiving end, or else there is a lapse of accurate transmission, as if the teletype operator has his fingers on the wrong line of keys, etc. When that happens, instead of seeing, in my dreams, the perfectly articulated English prose passages which would be the result of all components functioning correctly, I get gibberish like this, meaningless names and words and sequences of numbers which have no significance. Unless one is very, very careful to factor out, to use a scrupulous reject circuit of some kind, I suppose this would come with practice, one is confronted with the task of making sense out of random or inaccurate integers. I give these actual examples. 832, 835, 541, 2960. Eleanor. Mr. Arensky. Mrs. Aramchek. Sadasa Ulna. 17. Command Odd. G12. 524-2681. P13. Considering the distance over which these packets of information travel and their velocity, much contamination, signal loss, and other familiar invasion of the material contained must take place. Crosstalk from other fields, so that when the tachyons at last impinge on us, even if our transduction is superb, as in the case of mystics and saints, there would be something quite less than a perfect meaningful construct. I suppose that out of these Etouan Cherdlou type of ramblings, or whatever you get on a linotype when your fingers go from left to right, the various names of God are constructed. They supply the spurious and dogmatic holy writ, such as the Mormons treasure as their inspiration. If you recall the weird word found on deserted Roanoke Island in 1591, which was Satosioan, carved on a tree and everyone mysteriously gone. Well, look, I did it just then. I had my fingers one key to the right on my keyboard. The word is Croatoan. I was copying it from my textbook, and I had my eyes away from my hands, thus marvelously proving my point. But for centuries, scholars have been trying to figure out what Croatoan means. Probably, it means nothing. The terrified colonists of the island, faced by one or more hostile forces, famine, Indians, plague, etc., had an inspiration and left the island for some other sanctuary, believing that those letters spelled out something meaningful. Perhaps the cosmic teletype operator turned his head for a moment, as I did, and erred. In my novel, Galactic Pothealer, there's a girl character named Molly Yoyes. Not being able to think of another name, I hit keys at random and used what I got. Years later, a burned-out freak who had read the book looked at me with secret insinuating accusation and said, pointing to these letters used as a name, "That's me you're writing about there in your book." I pointed out that Molly Yoyes was in no way his name. "It's a code you used," he explained, "to cover over my name so I wouldn't know. But I do know." I then pointed out that I had written and published the book years before I ever met him. At that, his all-knowing paranoid glee increased. "That just proves how clever you are," he said. "You even knew about me in advance." You see what I mean, Peter? I've reinserted this into the typewriter, because just as I was about to mail this, it occurred to me that according to my tachyon theory, I could well have anticipated meeting the above-mentioned burnt-out freak. This brings to my mind my strange and eerie feeling that my novels are gradually coming true. At first I laughed about this, as if it was only a sort of small matter. But over the years, my God, I've been selling stories for 23 years. It seems to me that by subtle but real degrees, the world has come to resemble a PKD novel. Or, put another way, subjectively, I sense my actual world as resembling the kind of typical universe which I used to merely create as fiction, and which I left, often happily, when I was done writing. Other people have mentioned this too, the feeling that more and more they are living in a PKD novel. And several freaks have even accused me of bringing on the modern world by my novels. Well, a case could be made here for my above tachyon theory. I guess, although I hadn't thought of it until now, let us say that I am inspired by a creative entity outside my conscious personality to write what I write. I had imagined it to be my subconscious, but this only begs the question, what is the subconscious? There is no doubt that, quite frankly, I do not in any real sense write my novels. They do come from some non-I part of me. Often they contain dreams I've had. This was true of Lovecraft, I've heard. If tachyon bombardment was inspiring my novels, then it would stand to reason that the world, It is really all the same world which my books depict, as has been pointed out in critical essays many times. It would stand to reason that, as the years pass, my books would, so to speak, come true. They are about the future in two ways. They describe it fictionally, like SF tends to do, and they, being inspired by tachyon information about the actual future or possible several alternate futures, depict oncoming reality. Isn't our world now somewhat like the world in Solar Lottery, my first novel? And other later novels of mine even more so. I do not wish to be in one of my own novels, by the way, so this isn't wish fulfillment. Anyhow, I'm not the only person who's noticed that the world seems to be getting like my novels. It was pointed out to me recently that if I had waited another year to bring out Flow My Tears, it would have been out of date. Actually, it was by and large finished in 1970. Several times I've had the uncanny experience of meeting people who resemble persons, characters, I'd previously made up for my novels. In Flow My Tears, there's a 19-year-old girl named Kathy, as you recall, whom Jason meets. She is a girl of the gutter, so to speak, living a quasi-illegal existence. The next year, 1971, I in fact did meet a girl the same age living a life so similar to that of the girl in the novel as to frighten me. Frighten me that if she reads the book ever, she may sue. Her name? Kathy. I am not the true and actual source of my own fiction, and I've always wondered what the source was. John Denver, the current folk singer, says he doesn't compose his many songs. They're out there in the air somewhere, he says, and I just fish them in. Well, my novels aren't out there in the air. They're in my unconscious. Or are they? Maybe Denver is right. It's coming at us from a standpoint physically outside our brains, not down deep below the surface. In point of fact, SF is often thought of as future history, and this notion is one I've combated with great irritation over the years. And yet I'm faced with the fact that time and history have caught up with me, which is perhaps one reason why you and others were disappointed with Flow of Tears. I waited too long to bring it out. Put another way, the gap between my vision and the actual world has gotten smaller and smaller over the years. When I wrote Solar Lottery, it was a vision that no one else had. But how can I claim my vision in Flow My Tears to be unique in the same way? I could do as well by getting my information from newspapers, perhaps. How strange. How frightening. To me, anyhow. And yet, as of this March, with the sudden bombardment of the non-objective graphics, perhaps I have once again regained contact with the authentic future. For example, the work I'm engaged in now is a sequel to Man in the High Castle, at last. I've wanted to do that for 12 years, but never come up with an idea good enough. Based on my experiences from March of this year on, I believe I have indeed finally come up with an idea good enough and am deep into it. I feel that the external creative force which I've discussed throughout this letter, whatever its source, whatever its nature, has inspired me as I have never been inspired before. More important to me than what it is, what it's called, is the quality of its inspiration to me and the effect on my writing. Well, from these experiences over the past 3 months, I do have a terrific idea. I think the best of my life, and in no way will it be anything you can read about in the present-day newspaper. Perhaps what has happened is nothing more or less than a sudden return to the old force of creativity, which animated me in years past and novels past. Whatever it is, God bless it, and I am grateful for it. Wish me luck, and also let me know what you think of all this. I value your opinion uniquely. Letter to Claudia Bush, July 5, 1974. 4:13. Dear Claudia, since I last wrote you, sending on the 7-page letter to Peter Fitting plus the 2-page letter to you, I have continued to have the same dream again and again which I mentioned, a vast and important book held up before me which I should read. Yesterday, for example, since Tessa and Christopher had gone off on a picnic, I took several naps and had four dreams in which printed matter appeared, two of them involving books. For 3 months, virtually every night, I've had these dreams involving written material, and within the last few days it became obvious that a specific book was indicated, that the ultimate purpose of all these dreams was to call my attention to an actual book somewhere in the real world, which I was to find, then take down and read. The first dream on July 4th was much more explicit than any before. I took down my copy of Robert Heinlein's I Will Fear No Evil, a large blue hardback UK edition, for two men to look at. Both men said this was not a book, or the book, they were interested in. However, it was clear that the book wanted was large and blue and hardback. In a dream a month ago, I managed to see part of the title. It ended in the word grove. At the time, I thought it might be Proust's Within a Budding Grove, but it was not. However, there was a long word similar to budding before grove. So I knew by the first part of the day yesterday that I was looking for a large blue hardback book. Very large and long, according to some dreams, endlessly long, in fact, with the final word of the title being grove and a word before it like budding. In the last of the four dreams yesterday, I caught sight of the copyright date on the book and another look at the type style. It was dated either 1966 or possibly 1968. The latter proved to be the case. So I began studying all the books in my library which might fit these qualifications. I had the keen intuition that when I at last found it, I would have in my hands a mystic or occult or religious book of wisdom, which would be a doorway to the absolute reality behind the whole universe. Of course, the possibility existed that I didn't have the book in my library, that I would have to go out and buy it. In several dreams, I was in a bookstore doing just that. One time, the book was held open before me with its pages singed by fire on all sides. By that, I took it to be an extremely sacred book, perhaps the one seen in the Book of Daniel. Anyhow, today I looked all day around the house, since Tessa has been sick with a sunburn, and all at once I found the book. The 3 month search is at last over. As soon as I took down the volume, I knew it to be the right one. I had seen it again and again with ever increasing clarity until it could not be mistaken. The book is called The Shadow of Blooming Grove, hardback and blue, running just under 700 huge long pages of tiny type. It was published in 1968. It is the dullest book in the world. I tried to read it when the Book Find Book Club sent it to me, but couldn't. It is a biography of Warren G. Harding. Cordially, Phil Dick. P.S. This is on the level, and it goes to show you that you should never take your dreams too seriously. Or else it shows that the unconscious, or the universe, or God, or whatever, can put you on. A 3 month gag. If you want to read the book, I'll mail it to you. Postage should be enormous. You got 3 years ahead in which you have nothing planned?